Today's power of will is one of the 12 powers within us, and it naturally includes willpower. We have a sense of what willpower looks like in modern times, but have you ever considered what willpower might have looked like in eras of the past? Kelly McGonigal is the author of The Willpower Instinct, and she poses this question in a way that is humorous and understandable. She says that even in the Stone Age, the rules for how to influence people and win over friends were pretty much the same. They were things like cooperate when your neighbor needs shelter, share your dinner even if you're still hungry, and think before you say something like, you look kind of fat in that loincloth. In other words, practice self-control. So the will's body location is in this prefrontal cortex, this area of the brain. It's right next to understanding and behind the power of imagination. And it's funny, incidental maybe, that in the Stone Age is when we actually were evolving or expanding, I should say, expanding that prefrontal cortex of the brain. We're always evolving, aren't we? We're always evolving physically, we're always evolving mentally, and we're certainly always evolving spiritually. That's actually what the 12 powers teaching is all about. It's about recognizing that power by power, we begin to raise up our consciousness and the fullness of our divinity can be experienced. So it's this evolution, this constant development as we focus in on each of these powers and sometimes the powers that work together in companionship with one another. So we'll come back to this concept of willpower, but also I want to look at some other aspects of the power of will first. Let's start at the top, God's will. So a lot of folks get confused about God's will. So it kind of depends on who we're or how we're experiencing what is God, how we're answering that question. So if we back it up a little and say, well, what is God? If God is not superhuman, which God is not, but we recognize instead that God is this permeating presence in the universe, the sense of love, the sense of expansive goodness, essentially, then we begin to open up and recognize that there's something else at work here. And we can also recognize that our heart's desire, the thing that we will ultimately, is one and the same with a sense of love and goodness. So these two things are not in conflict. The reason why we have the perception that God's will is something other than our own will is because we sometimes have a childlike kind of conception of God, or maybe one that we learned in childhood, where God is like this punishing, rewarding kind of entity. And so we got to be on God's good side, and maybe we're not. So God's will might end up being something we don't want. But when we shift into what our concept is of the source and who we are, we begin to see that there isn't a separation between the divine and us, and therefore no separation between the divine's will and our will. So there are other ways that we might get a little bit misconstrued in that by thinking that, you know, oh, I have to look out for number one because there's not enough, right? Getting into that lack and limitation kind of idea, or that I'm not enough somehow. So all of those can kind of get us a little bit off kilter and confused about, is this really my will or God's will? And should I be afraid? And so I hope that distinction helps let go of some of that fear and reminds us of the fact that we are one with the spirit, and we are one with all these pieces and parts of ourselves, especially that underlying truth, which we'll dig into a little bit more. Because we have to look deeper under our actions. Like sometimes when we think of will, we just think of action, right? It's our willfulness. It's our action in the world. It's what we're determined to do. And that determination is actually a part of will for sure, but it's getting a little bit underneath there to see what the motivating factor is. So let me give you an example. When I was in my 20s, I would smoke when I went out with my friends sometimes. And then, well, actually, that was in college. And then when I was in my 20s, I sometimes would actually buy a pack of cigarettes just for myself. And I would sit on my back porch, and I called it my thinking tool. And I would have maybe a cigarette one evening, and then maybe a few evenings later. It wasn't a frequent thing, but I would, you know, take a long drag and just kind of feel the evening air and sort of unwind my day and think about my life. And I called it my thinking tool. And then I would notice that I had this icky feeling in my lungs. And so I had this experience of, I would buy a pack, I would smoke a few, I would get disgusted, I would throw it out, I would buy a pack. I found out recently how much a pack of cigarettes cost. I overheard it at a convenience store, and I was like, wow, times have changed. And we have changed in our understanding of just how detrimental something like smoking can be. So in my story, though, what changed for me is that I discovered Unity also in my 20s. I think it was about 25 when I first came to Unity. And with it, I discovered meditation. So in meditation, I began to find a space to get quiet and to unwind and to be still, which is really ultimately what I had been looking for. It was actually an unthinking tool that allowed me to do what I wanted to do. And I also, over time, even today, realize sometimes meditation isn't what I need. I really do want to ruminate and think, but I want sort of an expansive place to do that. So I might do that under the night sky or the daytime sky, watching the clouds go by, giving me that sense of expansiveness and intentionality to just giving some reflection time. So the point is that we can take on new habits, and they can help us shift into a whole new way of being, but we have to be willing. We have to be willing to try new things in order to do so. So when we do, like in my story, when we shift our habits and we find, oh, that thing that I was wanting, that sense of stillness, is fulfilled in a way that is far less detrimental to my health. And much more, has much more lasting and beneficial aspects to it. So was it my will to smoke? No. Was it God's will for me to smoke? No. It was my will to be still. And that is one with the will of the divine, right? Because there was, to be still, there were all the things that come with being still: a sense of peace, a sense of reflection, a sense of expansiveness, all of those things that I was ultimately looking for. So it's ours to uncover this deeper sense of what our will really is, and how it is then, we'll see, naturally connected to the divine will. And that helps us then begin to put feet to our prayers, right? To begin to allow the energy to unfold and to take action. We can apply this same kind of thinking, the same kind of understanding to really big world issues. Let's take, for example, terrorism. It's on our hearts and minds. We're watching what's going on in Afghanistan. We're seeing what's going on domestically. It's a real concern for so many of us. What's happening with this idea of terrorism? So one of the things we can do from this really purely spiritual, prayerful place is to recognize that the individuals who get involved in these terrorist groups are tortured folks, right? There's a lot of pain there. And so that pain might actually have something to do with this willfulness versus willingness, this misunderstanding of God's will and our will. And so if we can recognize that when these folks, the individuals who can shift, who change, who have an awakening, they come into the truth of what the will is, what their will is, their will aligned with God's will. And then they'll see the will of our shared humanity, right? Our will of our shared humanity is well-being for all, is equity for all, it's kindness for all, it's love, right? It's all these things. It's a sense of peace and harmony and plenty, a reverence for all life. So it can be difficult to do this big spiritual work to bring these kinds of folks into our hearts and to hold space. But when we do, we are pushing out a collective energy that can tip the scales, that can bring that critical mass that is needed to tip the scales into spiritual awakening. So it's our prayerful work that can make the biggest difference. We have to be willing, though. We have to be willing to let into our hearts the pain of the world, to let into our hearts the perpetrators of some of this pain, and to recognize with compassion how off, a lot out of alignment people can get and can breed this in these kinds of groups. So God doesn't have a will that separates and punishes. And as people awaken, they'll begin to see that. The divine force is one that enlivens us, that supports us, that connects us, that encourages us. And so as we contribute to that shift, to that critical mass shift, we can help usher in the spiritual awakening that wants to happen on our planet. We can use our power of will, our willingness, and our action. Action, even as a prayer, even as a blessing sent out, even as a practice that allows us to say, I'm strong in my divinity, and I can bring in some of that darkness into the light that I am feeling right now, and see it be transformed in the presence of the divine, in the presence of this Christed consciousness. And the more that we work these powers, the more that the wholeness of that Christed or divine consciousness is available to us. So I hope you'll join me in this prayer practice and allowing ourselves. And this is not, I want to say, this is not about not holding people accountable for their actions. That's a separate issue. And that's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about is the ability for us to take action where we can take action, to be willing, to be open, to be guided, and then to follow through on that action. And prayer is something we can all do. So I hope you'll join me in that work. The power of will isn't meant to be costly. It's not meant to cost lives, that's for sure. And it's also not meant to be costly to our well-being. So whether it's something we're doing personally to our own beings that isn't helpful or beneficial, or if it's this kind of worldwide thing that is happening, or thing that is happening on a social level in pockets of the world. So it's back to this idea that we can help shift destructive will in the collective, and we can do that within ourselves. Free will, then. So there's a cost, right, when we're out of alignment, as I was speaking of. But free will is free, right? There's no cost at all to free will. And this is the great gift that we have been given, is free will. It's a big part of what the power of will is all about, is to use our free will. It helps shape our destiny. And when we are good at using it, or wise in the way that we use it, then it can work toward the greater good. It's always our choice. It's always free. We can work to heighten the greater good or to lessen the greater good, to heighten the good within ourselves and our lives, or to lessen it. So it's always up to us. With a willing heart, though, we can move through any obstacles and bring forth the highest good. When my classmates and I began ministerial school, the dean of the school was wise to give us a little slip of paper. And it just had one little thing on it, and each of us got one, and we opened it up, and it said, "I choose to be here." Of course, then we were excited to be together. Everything was new, you know. But it was a good reminder. She was very wise to give us that, because throughout the 2 years, there were certainly times then things got really rough. I would often think of ministerial school, or phrase it as spiritual boot camp. You know, you're doing a lot of inner work in an intense period of time with a group of people. And so there's a lot that comes up to be healed, to be looked at, to be raised up so that we can grow and become as spiritually mature as possible before we go out and help lead ministries. And so it's good work. It needs to be done for sure. And we need to remember that we chose to be there. So I bet there are things in your life that you've taken on. And sometimes those things, even though you chose to do it, it gets hard, right? Anybody? I can't see you, but I can feel you. I know we have. So maybe you've promised somebody something, sometimes it gets hard, even though you know it's ultimately what you want, it's hard to follow through. For whatever reasons, challenges come our way. So if so, there's a process that I want to suggest to us to work through that. It first includes engaging our power of understanding, which is, as I mentioned, right next to the power of will, the power that we talked about last week and under that Veronica shared about it in understanding. And then there's that power of will, right? So let's start with the power of understanding. I'll invite you, actually, if you want to just move with me by closing your eyes and moving fully through this exercise. So as we take a moment, we can begin to bring our attention to that frontal area of the brain. And we call forth that color of understanding. It's gold. And so we see the golden light as it bathes our whole beings, but it emanates there from that frontal brain. The power of understanding is now being activated and ignited in you in a very direct and attentive way. And we call for specifically the compassionate aspect of understanding to support ourselves. Self-compassion teacher Kristen Neff suggests a few steps that we can take. And so let's just continue in this. We can acknowledge what is present. So at any given time when we are stressed or we are feeling like, there's a mismatch between what we plan to do and what we've actually done, and we're upset with ourselves in some way. So we can allow ourselves some self-compassion. And the first step is a mindful step. That step is acknowledging what is present by saying something to ourselves such as, this is stress, or ouch, or this hurts. And then the second step is to move into our shared humanity, to recognize our shared humanity, that everyone struggles and that I am not alone. So just saying that to ourselves when we're in one of these processes, we've recognized that there's a stressful feeling present, thoughts present, state of mind and heart. And then we remember our shared humanity. Everybody has struggles in life. I am not alone. And finally, we can put our hands on our hearts. And I just invite you to do that and just maybe kind of rub your heart, just make creating some friction, some warmth there. Just feeling that touch and that warmth, activating that space of the heart. And you can say to yourself, I am kind to myself. Once you feel a sense of readiness to move forward, we can then shift into the power of will, to re-engage our power of will. So I invite you then to go back to the mind, to that prefrontal cortex. Will is right next to understanding, as I mentioned, and begin to see the silver light of will, like moonlight. Moonlight reflecting maybe on a vast body of water, the beauty and the clarity that comes with that beam of moonlight reflecting, allowing you to reflect. As it glistens on the water, it reflects your true desires. It reminds you, we are reminding ourselves of who we are as divine beings, of what we have come here to do and to be. It helps us to rise up again to the occasion and the fulfillment of our desires. When we have finished activating our powers of understanding and will, using the self-compassion as well, we are ready then to take the next step to our chosen journey. If your eyes are still closed, I invite you to open them and to come back into the space. You can remember those three steps of self-compassion by mindfulness, shared humanity. Mindfulness, so we become mindful, right? This is stress. We just name it, whatever it is. This hurts. Then shared humanity. I'm not alone. Everybody struggles in their lives. And then to that place of kindness of the heart. I'm kind to myself. So sometimes those actual physical actions help us remember the steps. As I mentioned earlier, willfulness and willingness are two different things. There is an aspect of willfulness that is about commitment, but these two, they're still kind of two opposing forces. They kind of work against each other. Willfulness often shows up as stubbornness, right? I'm going to do it because I've set my mind to it, and that's all that's happening. And it can cause us to put the kind of blinders on that don't really see the costs or consequences that might happen. Actually, you might see this in terrorist kinds of groups. The willfulness, the stubbornness, the fixed state of mind and perception, and then actions that, often violent actions that are seen as the right actions to take, are with blinders. It's just pure stubborn willfulness. But willingness is something else. Willingness opens us to our divine selves. Willingness opens us to spirit. We're not forcing and moving ahead like that, but we're open, we're receiving, we're allowing. And so when we receive and allow in this way, we are able to be coached by spirit, essentially. Can you be coached by spirit? Are you willing to be coached by spirit? When we say yes to that, we all automatically begin to open ourselves to receive and to utilize, to be called, to get guidance, and then to use the power of will to act from there. And if we are willing then to open ourselves to be coached by spirit, we will be asked to let go. We will be led to allow further, to maybe to wait. We will be told to be in this kind of receptive place often first, to suspend judgment, to just be in that expansive, receptive place. And then we may be guided to take action, right? To step up, to step in, to move through any fears, to perhaps needing to be courageous to do the things that are ours to do. The power of will requires commitment. So that's a little bit different than willfulness, but it has some sense of determination and commitment to it. It helps us stay the course that we have set. And if the course was set or reset by spirit, by listening and following spirit, it will also lead us to do what's congruent with our values. What is the honest thing to do? The thing that is in integrity? What is the thing that is kind or loving or effective to do in this moment? We can trust that. All of that will be involved. That's our will and the divine's completely aligned with one another. To get there, we need to do two things. Be willing to let our immediate needs or thoughts for that moment be given over and let spirit show us the way. And to stay committed to follow through and take action on our guidance. It's not always easy to do, is it? Sometimes I think the power of will is like that narrow gate that Jesus was pointing to when he said to enter the kingdom, you must enter through the narrow gate. This is what Romans 7 says. I wonder if you can relate to it too. I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. And what I hate, I do. This I keep on doing. I know the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. Anybody relate to that? So the question really becomes, will we serve what is immediately gratifying, or will we stay the course for our long-term desires and goals? Will we feed the cookie monster, or will we access our Fitbit? Will we follow the impulses of the achiever in us or the procrastinator? Will we lean into our selfish tendencies or our generous ones? If you have a goal, for example, of taking better care of yourself, and instead you find yourself reaching for the junk food or the wine or the remote control or all three, instead of taking a walk or doing whatever it is that you intended to do, then you understand, right? This sort of juxtaposition that Romans 7 is setting up. Or maybe you do have the intention to better your practice, your spiritual practice of meditation and prayer, and yet you find yourself hitting the ground running and getting busy on your to-dos and feeling depleted at the end of the day. When we cave into our immediate gratification, we can fall prey to the double whammy of willpower. The double whammy is, I didn't do what I set out to do, but now I'm beating myself up for having not done what I set out to do. And that double whammy is not helpful. In fact, research even suggests that when we do that to ourselves, we create a cycle that does not allow us to achieve what it is that we desire. Because the more we beat ourselves up, the more we tend to reach for that immediate gratification to comfort ourselves. And we rationalize because we feel so lousy. And then we get in that cycle. So it's a strange and funny thing, because we're inflicting pain on ourselves because we didn't do something we set out to do. And then we're back in that cycle of doing more of it. So if we can sort that out a little bit and recognize that when our good intentions go awry, there is a way to get off this wheel that creates feelings of guilt or shame or, you know, all the stuff that goes with that, maybe lower self-esteem, things that make us feel worse. And you won't be surprised at how we do that to get off that wheel. Go within. Because when we go within, everything does get reset. When we go within and check in and ask ourselves, what do I need right now? Maybe it is self-compassion to get back on track. Maybe it is the process we just went through, activating some understanding, moving through the self-compassion steps, then coming back to that silvery light that is expressed out, that will that allows us and helps us to take action. When the will is ready, the feet are light. That's from Proverbs. I believe that every one of us comes to this earth by our soul choice. We are here on our planet at this time because each one of our souls said yes to being here, right now on this planet, and even more so together as a community. And we have the free will to contribute to the success of our society, of our world, and of our personal lives. When we align with the divine, and we are given that calling, even moment to moment, whatever it is that is calling us, that is connected to the contribution of how we can succeed together, how we can achieve, how we can awaken together. And then we can exercise that priceless gift of free will and choose to live our most fulfilling lives and choose to contribute to the lasting positive effects in our world that we all see through our own spiritual eyes that can be so. Let's recognize that we choose to be here for one, and remember that when the going gets rough. Be willing to be coached by spirit and take divine right action. Our affirmation today, I'm going to say it once through and then we can say it together. I choose to be here, coached by spirit. I follow through on divine right action. Let's say it together. I choose to be here. Coached by spirit, I follow through on divine right action. Let's get busy with our will and enjoy this week. I'll see you next week. Blessings.